So, welcome to Conexión Circular, where we aim to raise awareness of sustainability and circular economy topics. Stay tuned with us so we can learn together more about how we can adopt sustainable behaviors. I'm Viridiana Bello-Wickle, and today we will discuss about perspectives on air quality and the role of air filtration in technologies in providing a sustainable, healthy built environment. Our guest is Dr. Iyad. He's a mechanical engineer and an independent air filtration consultant. He's also a visiting academic fellow in the School of Aerospace, Transport and Manufacturing of at Cranfield University, consulting for air quality and filter performance relevant to land-based gas turbines. Thank you so much, Dr. Iyad, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me this morning. It's great to have the opportunity to share some of these insights and perspectives about air quality and filtration.
Yes, so Dr. Iyad, tell us more about yourself before discussing this, the main topic. What motivates you to work in sustainability?
Well, you know, I mean, let's put things in perspective. We all live in one planet. We share the same resources. In a way, whatever we do in one part of the world will affect the next or the neighboring countries and eventually the planet. We've seen what happened in the wildfires. And we ought to appreciate the oneness of our planet. And that highlights the premise of our shared responsibility. I'm a mechanical engineer by profession, and I worked in this field for nearly the past 25 years, and then I obtained my graduate studies and my PhD in air filtration, and hoping to bring about at least thoughts and perspectives and solutions so that we filter the air in a much better manner. Later on in my professional career, I realized that we're polluting so much, and therefore filtration will have to play a much bigger role. So the question to ask today is, why are we polluting so much, which will place tremendous emphasis on resources and raw material, and then later on disposal in terms of manufacturing more filters. So it's a vicious cycle. We pollute so much, and eventually we have to filter so much, but also we have to look at from a wider perspective. We're wasting too much. There is a lot of overconsumption and there's a lot of waste. So therefore, it's not a secret that we're overproducing as well. And then again, the real question to ask is why there is so much air pollution, why the rising tide of air pollution has been always, increasing. The second thing I'd like to say is that today, from a sustainability point of view, there is so much competition on raw material, energy markets, business. And what we need to do is embrace business models that undertake purpose and profit. So there has to be a social responsibility alongside the financial responsibilities. So from an air perspective, as I said, we need to consider the entire way we live, generate and use power, and consider even the way we treat our planet. So, that would be the premise why I got involved in filtration in the first place. And now I'm embracing filtration, because without having sustainable solutions that may not necessarily have filtration as a common denominator, but having filtration as a tool to filter eventually the emissions that we cannot really avoid.
Yes. So according to World Health Organization, the air pollution is a major environmental health problem affecting everyone in low, middle, and high income countries. Ambient outdoor air pollution in both cities and rural areas was estimated that in 2019, it caused 4.2 million premature deaths worldwide. Also, we have this urbanization increased city population density and leading to severe indoor air pollution. As a result of these trends, the issue of sustainable and healthy indoor environment has received increased attention, no? So why we were such easy prey for the pandemic, given all the air quality tools and filtration technologies available at our fingertips?
It's a great question. I think the trouble started years ago when filtration experts addressed the importance of air quality and the concerns of air quality, and decision makers decided to leave rather than lead the conversation. The experts could not, you know, the filtration experts could not be more eloquent. They've highlighted the importance of filtration, debunked the filtration myth, stressed on the allocation of insufficient budgets when it comes to filter acquisition and appropriate filter selection. But, you know, again, I don't think a great success has been achieved, and the result was the pandemic. And during the pandemic, the only tactic that worked apparently well enough was pulling the plug, going to lockdowns, and basically watching our economies global economies crush and crumble. I don't think this is an appropriate tactic. I don't think it's sustainable. And we can no longer pull that plug every time a pandemic curve or COVID, for example, cases hike. There has to be a concrete measures to confront future pandemics. I heard this a lot, that let's be ready for the next pandemic. No, I think the premise here is let's not have pandemics at all. And that's going to require that we rethink how we approach our built environment, the building envelope, air filtration, sensors, and how to integrate all these technologies to have finally something that is sustainable. We possess the technologies. What we need to embrace is the determination to sit down on one table, gathering the architects, the engineers, decision makers, and end users, and say to the developers, this is what we're planning to do. Now we've got the technology that is accessible, the targets are attainable, and it's affordable. So there isn't really an excuse that, oh, maybe it's too expensive. But again, let me go back and saying this, seeking lockdowns as a safety measure from the virus doesn't really work. The pandemic really represented a litmus test against deficient air filtration technologies, maintenance tactics and shortcuts, deficient systems, whether it's heating, ventilation, air conditioning, or maybe aged, that left in operation beyond their capabilities or beyond their expected date. So what we need to look at is a completely brand new approach that will embrace and invite state-of-the-art technologies, not only infiltration, but everything surrounds the built environment, to come and say, let's depart from chronic filter failures. Let's have better indoor air quality, the best indoor air quality possible, not just that set by the standard.
Yes, I think it's important to understand what is indoor air quality. So for a small definition, is how inside air can affect a person's health, comfort, and ability to work. And it can include temperature, humidity, lack of outside air, like a poor ventilation, mold from water damage, or exposure to other chemicals. And I think most of, I think we never think about that when we are renting a house or when we move to another place. I think the last thing that we check is the air quality. And the pandemic, I think, was one of the tipping points where the person noticed how this topic is so important in your health, because it was directly affecting you. And why has the role of filtration technologies been undermined in enhancing air indoor quality?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a good perspective. Look, air filtration has always been either or misunderstood, overlooked, or simply just ignored. air filtration and the tools associated with air filtration and the stages that it can provide has been looked at as an accessory to a specific system, for example, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. So it's not looked at as a driving force. Air filters are usually encapsulated by a system. So basically, the HVAC system decision makers will probably have their say on what filters. And I would say, prior to the pandemic, barely anybody had an air quality, air filtration conversation to say, I want to make sure I don't inhale PM1, for example. So the paradox here is that people want to have the best indoor air quality, but there's no infrastructure in your built environment and building envelope to build on it. So, you know, I mean, if you're not able to quantify the air quality that you're inhaling, what conversation can you have with your air filter manufacturer or, facility manager, or even your HVAC system, even if you're starting a building construction today? You know, so the key point here is to quantify. And to quantify, you need to have the appropriate air quality sensors that will do that for you continuously. We are in 2023, so you can now receive notifications when a specific pollutant that you are actually tracking and monitoring continuously will send you a message. That was not available 10, 20, 30, 50 years ago. So we are on the edge to have something spectacular. Now, air quality has been, I would say, on a regular basis dismissed, of course, because, as I said, it's not looked at as a key element in, for example, the HVAC system or any other process. But what's really needs to be looked at is air quality has been waiting for its seat in the built environment and the HVAC table, given the bearing it has on the indoor comfort or the thermal comfort or the general well-being of human occupants. Unfortunately, facility management has hovered around thermal comfort. If I can get you to be thermally comfortable, I've achieved my goal. Or maybe let's look at energy efficiency. How can I maximize revenues by reducing maybe the cost? And therefore, we've seen what happened. Most governments chose to have lockdowns, to flee through curfews and lockdowns, rather than fight the pandemic that invaded our cities and found us very easy to do so. You know, all we had to do is surrender in the cities. We call it smart. And lock ourselves down.
Yes, you mentioned something important, that is, if we don't measure, we don't know what is our performance. So it's good that now with the technology we can start to have this measure about what is the indoor air quality index, and also to understand and as a consumer, if we are changing houses, to check and ask if they have it. So if we start to know more about this, we can ask for the facilitator what they are doing, the improvements, no? And for example, the best way to reduce fossil fuel usage with air filters is to reduce the amount of energy used in the air filtration system. Fossil fuels are used in most countries in generate electricity, and using the right air filter can reduce energy consumption. You mentioned this, no? So what is the environmental footprint of air filter manufacturing?
Okay, I mean, it's a good question. Let's just zoom out a little bit. We're expecting to have an air quality that hopefully free of solid particles or particulate matters, but we're also expecting the same for gaseous pollutants. So when you look at any conventional HVAC system, this system will just have solid kind of mechanical filtration. So as if it's okay to inhale gaseous pollutants, and that's not acceptable. That's going to rely on government, the private sector, industry leaders come and say, we're going to have to, you know, change that. challenge and change that in several ways. First is that we need to make sure that if the systems cannot be accommodated in an HVAC system, then maybe they can have a much bigger space within the system, maybe not so much linked to HVAC system, but integrated, of course, and say, well, I'm granting you much more space, much more surface area to be able to conduct the appropriate filtration. The challenges today in terms of air pollution are grand. And simple air filtration, random segments with very low, modest efficiencies won't work. And we've seen how this was evident. Now, to have high efficiency, the thought or the myth a long time ago was, if I have high efficiency filter, most probably I'm going to have, it's going to require a lot of energy to basically put the air through it or pass the air through it, because eventually also you want to get the flow rate. Things have changed, and there is filter media innovations now that can provide you the efficiency at a much lower pressure drop. But again, this is on a very close technical perspective. I think on the wider perspective, we need to make sure that we have technologies and innovations that does not really have a lot of requirement to produce and later on to use. So we're not just exhausting our planet, asking to have a lot of energy for both. I know energy, renewable energy can play a much bigger part, but still we need to look at innovations. And the thing is, we need to look, revisit the basics. So go back to the supply chains, maybe turn the table on its head and say, is this the only way I can manufacture an air filter? Is there an innovation that I can capture pollutants without having to use a lot of energy? The pandemic, I know a lot of people basically say, oh, I always go back to the pandemic. I think the pandemic is a great learning lesson, and there is a lot of things to learn from the pandemic. But let me emphasize on a few points here. In the manufacturing process, we need to make sure, you're also responsible for the supply chains. So you know where your parts are coming from. And if you don't, basically, your sustainability report won't be able to reveal something like this for your end users or your buyers or customers. But we also need to look at economic outcomes. We need to ensure that the end user is willing to pay more, possibly, for a product that is, let's say, green, that has not been abusive to the environment. So, just look at it from that point of view, because it's unfair if there's a filtration company embracing sustainable metrics and then another company that's not doing so. And of course, one that is not doing so maybe is able to make more profit and, not take care of its supply chain, its people and employees. So producing more and better economic models and outcomes will definitely help in reducing the footprint, which are many, but in a way have products that we can one day say, okay, it's green in one way or another.
Yes, I agree with you about the pandemic, because I think the pandemic was great lesson, because it made us to look how we are disconnected of everything, because before of that we know that all the raw materials, where they come from. Now with the globalization and all this new industry, and we have to have more profit, the consumer, they didn't know now who is made, who makes your clothes, who is doing this. And as you say, that sometimes we don't know where are the raw materials, and we have done the things all the time in the same way. So the pandemic was like, okay, you have to think again, what are you doing? Because we are over-consuming, the world is changing, and we need to understand that everything that we consume has impact. Why? Because someone has produced it, and this person maybe is not in our country, it's in another side of the world, and this person has a social impact also. And if we, everything that we are consuming now has impact in someone, in a family, in an industry, in the environment. So we have to be more careful how we select the things that we buy. As you say, like if we are buying a AC, okay, we can invest a little more of money because it has all the requirements, no, all the green requirements, and will be more, we have more benefit of that, us and the social impact, no? So now we have this ESG in the, is the something, is the hot topic also, no? Like it's environmental, social, and governance. Just to explain a little bit, the first factor is the environmental. Why? Because include all the aspects related to air pollution, climate change, wastewater management, toxic emissions, electronic waste, and etc. And the S is for social factors that include like human rights and how is the work conditions for the worker, the safety and the health. And governance are generally include the steps taken by the organization that aligns with the laws and politics. So ESGs, are we stepping on anyone's benevolence while availing filtered raw materials?
Excellent point again. Look, if every company gets to do business on its own way, we will never reach sustainable business models. Again, I'm not saying no one can claim to have achieved prosperity without financial gains. And also, I'm not suggesting otherwise. But, you know, embracing profit alone, we've seen it doesn't work because you need to bring in everybody in the business. I would suggest also on the supply chain to be part of your economic success. You cannot just think of economic vitality to be just for your employees and possibly your end user. We need to look also at profit. You know, if a product is manufactured at a very low cost and sold at a specific profit, that profit is basically maybe covering everybody. So not that somebody in the supply chain is making, you know, very low profit and an extent that they're not taking care of their employees, there is no health insurance, their kids don't go to appropriate schools. If they get sick, their chances of maybe survival is high, they suffer. Nobody would want to buy a product that entertained child labor, for example. So this is very important. I think ESG metrics will help us have a standard, you know, ethical way of doing business because you're not here alone. Again, let's highlight the oneness of this planet. What if eventually we run out of material or filter media to manufacture filters? This was a little bit felt during the pandemic, and people were striving to get more filter media. And if without filter media, you cannot filter anything. So there is no conversation to be had. You're asking me now, okay, I'm going to install high efficiency filters to capture the coronavirus. Well, guess what? What if the supply chains are suffering? And if this has not happened until the pandemic, it's an alarm, it's a red flag that we should be looking at it. So I look personally at the ESG metrics as a standard platform, a framework to embrace and to act so that, you know, you cannot just do business in the way that serves you best. You have to look at other people in the supply chain and also on the future use. The other thing I'd like to talk about is that availing raw materials. We need to be responsible. Are you responsible for the first layer? Are you responsible for the second layer, third layer? You know, this needs to be discussed, agreed upon, and looked at. The direction of, you know, going on the ESG is I think the only way forward. It's not going to work otherwise. From an energy perspective, you know, of course, if you combust fossil fuel responsibly and use in a horrendous manner, eventually you're going to have air pollution, and you know, you will call upon filtration to come and help you. But let's ask this question: what if the available air filtration technologies today are incapable to fully capture all the pollutants? I know they cannot capture CO2, you know, this is carbon capture, but you know, we have limitation, you know, not because we have air filtration technologies that justifies for us the air pollution sin. It's like almost an allowable sin. Oh, I have air filtration, don't worry, pollute, and then I will call upon some filtration company to give me the filtration technologies appropriate to do that. That's not acceptable, because we'll talk about, you know, that will address how circular is your process. But if we allow our air quality, outdoor air quality, to degrade, remember, this is the sink where you introduce air from outdoor to indoors. So the more polluted it is, the more stress we're gonna have on the systems that will bring the air, put it through a lot of filtration stages, which is energy intensive. One thing I wanna mention about the pandemic, I think the pandemic showed us not only that we've failed miserably in terms of air quality, you know, readiness, but we also learned that air quality cannot be an accessory. Air quality is a pillar of our global economy and the essence of safe built environment. So that's needs, we need to stress this so well. Again, a lot of people say, oh, it's too expensive, it costs too much, I can't embrace it. Well, you know, I think there's a misconception that if I embrace purpose, I cannot embrace profit. Profit and purpose are not mutually exclusive, and the risks we face today are, in the same time, they represent a lot of opportunities to do well while doing good.
Yes, I think it's time to do sustainable business, and there are businesses that they are doing profit, but they are sustainable, and we can align everything. So it's just the way that we have the mindset, like, just change it, that everything that we are doing, we have to have analyze what is our impact. In addition, as you mentioned, the air quality is the air we breathe. We need air to breathe. So it's important that this has to be in the topic of the how we are doing is it's very important to know what is the air quality, because we spend more time inside working in the schools. We are also outside, but inside we have to have this measure to know how impact our health also, no? So now that you mentioned the supply chains, so the climate change can affect indoor conditions by worsening indoor air quality issues and introducing new ones. So given the limited resources and time available to address climate change, how can air filtration manufacturing embrace circularity from design to disposal?
Again, tremendous topic. I think we need to, first of all, look at it from three perspectives. One is macro perspective, where policies, international trade, environment, and even preferences need to be looked at. And then the media perspective, where to a large extent, we deal with the sectors, the industry, and the rules and regulations of them. And on the micro perspective, what individual firms would require to embrace these sustainable targets, whether they are from different industries, different sectors, and so on. But I think, as I said earlier on, how does that impact businesses to think in embracing sustainable concepts? How can they embrace, how can they believe that embracing purpose and profit is not mutually exclusive? This is a milestone to be achieved. Please keep in mind that when we talk about circular economy, especially when it comes to air filtration, we have several challenges. One of them, we need to look at stages or elements or steps to position ourselves to think, you know, how to facilitate circular concepts. From an air filtration or air quality point of view, there are four important steps. First is the physical and chemical characterization of the outdoor air, of the geographic location you're located at, and where the HVAC system will probably take that air, introduce it indoors through some filtration system. So we need to know what we are up against, what pollutant types, concentrations, size distributions, challenging our air filtration system. Second is to make appropriate filter selection, which would entail filter media, appropriate filter design, designs that are aerodynamic. They don't require a lot of energy to put or to pass the flow rate through them. Third aspect is the multi-stage filtration that is appropriate to embrace or encompass the stages or the designs that you've selected earlier on. And eventually, the most important part is a functional system to operate within. If you do all this and your heating, ventilation, HVAC system is not operating well, or the pressure gauges that measure your pressure drop of the filter are disconnected or malfunctioning, or your contamination is reaching the fan section on diffusers and the ducts just because you have leaks, it defeats the intended purpose of why we have air filtration in the first place and why we do all of this. This is why it's important and critical to have air quality sensors continuously monitoring your air quality and notifying you as a customer. It's not expensive, it's accessible, it's attainable, it's affordable, thanks to those who kept going on the technology until they made it available for the public. Today, you can, you know, log in and buy a system for, I don't know, maybe less than $150, and they will send you notifications, and that can maybe help you know if there is contamination nearby, you know, your house or a building, and that may infiltrate to go to your kid's room. So it allows you to give you action. And I always say, if I can have a system that will save one life, it's worth the investment. So I reject the notion that this air quality endeavor, it's too expensive. It's not. And even if it's expensive, it's worthwhile, because we've seen we've lost everything, almost everything. We've lost a lot of loved ones. I lost a few people and classmates in high school and my university. So I know what it feels like to lose a friend or a loved one. But let's look at it from a design perspective. The project here is not to use filter extensively. You know, a lot of people tell me, oh, so you want me to replace filters on a regular manner. That's not my project. My project is do the scientific homework. If you can't, seek professional advice from certified air filtration specialists to help you do that, or air quality specialists. They will help you select appropriate filter media. They will do the analysis outdoor and indoors. They will tell you if you have even indoor source of pollution. They will select your filters and media and the technologies required to render your indoor environment fit to occupy. The last stage, which is really ignored in the past decades, is disposal. Now I've used the filter, whether it's a hospital, which it will be highly contaminated, of course. What do I do with these disposed filters? I mean, all the MBs will come and say, not in my backyard, not in yours. And I'm sure you wouldn't like to have a yard having these filters there. So this needs to be addressed. Can we do something before that? Yes, we can extend the use of filters. So we can almost delay the decision of disposing that filter by having appropriate filtration selection, so you extend the use. This is part of circularity. You extend the use of air filters, so you don't have to have a lot of disposal every 2 months, because that's also not sustainable. You know, you're stressing the supply chain on one end, and you're stressing the, if there is one day a specific or special filtration facility for recycling or reuse or repair. So looking at appropriate filter selection will allow you to facilitate the extension. So if your filter is living for 3 months with appropriate stage filtration and you do the appropriate homework, you might have 2 years, while balancing this between use and. Another aspect is basically disposal. Certain air filters, they come in, you know, having a metal part and a fibrous part. So there will be a cost involved from separating the metal part from the filter media, and that's gonna cost as well. Another aspect is to look at how you equip people in the maintenance team maintaining your filters in the building, because they're going to be exposed to a hazard, you know, inhaling air from particles from a polluted filter. This is not acceptable, and we need to look at the maintenance teams being part of the success equation, the air quality success equation. So we need to give them the tools, the conditions, training and retraining to be part of the entire air quality endeavor. Again, it would be great to hear one day that we have facilities for use air filters where we can entertain recycling, repairing, refurbishing, and possibly reusing. To one point, we can say, okay, we can maybe have ways where we can get that waste to some sort of a positive need. So I think to embrace this sort of facility, or a facility of that nature, certainly some concentrations need to be looked at. Some of them, to rethink a filter acquisition, how we can possibly render filtration or air quality as a service. So you don't necessarily have to pay for the filter. The filter company will come in and say, or the manufacturer or the contractor will say, I will do it for you. You want air quality free of pollutants, I will do it. You just pay me for giving that service. That will give back the responsibility of use and disposal back to the contractor or back to the manufacturer, or combined, to come and say, it's my responsibility to dispose socially and environmentally. I'm going to make sure I have this packed and disposed possibly to the yard or back to the manufacturer. So we address air quality from that perspective, changing the perception of how we want to get air quality. We don't necessarily have to purchase filters to be able to do it, because I may not have the experience how to install it and so on. So we give it back, we shift responsibilities to ensure that eventually we're getting the sustainable outcomes we look for.
Yes, I think that we need to integrate more the circular economy aspects in the things that we are doing, because 80% of the waste is because we don't have a good design in the process or in the product. So if we start to rethink what we are doing and the process of the product, as you say, that at the end the disposal that we used to do is just go to the landfill and we don't care, but these things can be recycled, or depending of the sector, no? As you mentioned, this is medical, we need to have another requirements, but it's important that this is opportunity for business, that there will be a contractor that is in charge of this topic and we can have the air quality. So it's something that is a good opportunity to do the right thing. And according to the World Economic Forum, we know that the buildings are responsible for the 40% of global energy consumption and 30% of the greenhouse gas emissions. You had mentioned a lot about the smart cities and in the race for net zero goals, Dr. Iyad, how can air filtration help raise the bar of air quality for smart cities and their built environment and the well-being of human occupants?
Okay, let's also again look at look at it from a different perspective. In order to gain intrinsic understanding of our status quo and what has led to what has happened in the past 3 years, we need to get out of this complacency mode that we are at. We have been singing the same energy efficiency song and not willing to entertain anything else but thermal comfort, for example. Air quality is important. Again, there is a filtration homework to do, but also air diffusion is important. How you eventually diffuse the air. So is that looked at extensively as much as you've looked at energy efficiency and all the other energy saving perspectives that we embrace almost so intensely? The second thing I want to say is that, yes, energy efficiency and energy saving is a focal point. Again, they're not mutually exclusive. We can have smart solutions that can have both. But I don't believe smart cities can be dusty. I don't believe smart cities can be polluted, or their building envelope can be polluted. So it just kind of doesn't make sense that I build a smart city with a lot of smart buildings that are hopefully green, but they also has to be clean, so that when I surrender myself into them, you know, I am in a built environment that is safe, and there is an integrated system, you know, that tells me that I have notifications, I have sensors that guard me. When the indoor air quality changes, any variation of indoor air quality will have a response from the HVAC system to adapt to that. This is what's going to change the dynamics of the industry, and eventually the outcomes we want to have indoors. But also, let me tell you this, relying on face masks, it's a nice tool. Of course, we can always have it when we don't really get a control over the indoor air quality in the space we are at. But I don't believe that having a face mask will basically exonerate everybody else from doing their homework. It just doesn't make sense. It's an additional tool. It's nice to have. It's great. It has its own benefits. This is great. But also, one other thing we need to look at is the varied perception of air quality enhancement. People think it's an accessory. People think it's too expensive. It's not needed. It's not really mentioned in the specifications. I think this has to change. Also, we need to look at filter selection. You know, when the pandemic came about, everybody went and said, I'm going to have high efficiency filter. Well, your system is not able to accommodate the pressure drop of, you know, HEPA filters or high efficiency filters. So high efficiency was the hype. You know, while we're not supposed to chase the hype, we're supposed to chase the case. And the case is sustainable air filter performance that doesn't really require a lot of energy, you know, to have it in operation and have it in operation for a much longer time. So extending the use. But again, it boils down to the way we live. And it's basically driving all our environmental challenges, the way we commute, the way we drive, the way we generate and use power. This is certainly things that have to be looked at.
Yes, I think I interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I think that it's important to understand and what is the air quality, what it means for us as a consumer, as the end users, because I grew up in a small town, so our air quality was good because it's Mexico, we have a lot of trees, it's open air, we don't care about anything. But when you move to a city, and the city is different, like you are in a small room and you start to have this like awareness, like, okay, it's important, I cannot breathe the same as breathe in my town. And then you move to another side of the world, that is the Middle East, and yes, it's different, and the people get used to like, no, this is the standard. But no, it doesn't have to be the standard. Like we need to know what is the the air quality in each area to understand if it's good or it's bad, because if we don't know, we start to say like, yes, because we are more visual, like, oh, the sky is dark, okay, the air quality is bad, but maybe not, maybe it's good, but we don't know if we live next to the industry, because in the town that I come from, that is Puebla, they designed the city, the copying, the same layout of the USA. But the USA is different. Is they have different, they didn't take account where is the air, no? Because it's different, the airflow from Mexico to the States. So we have all the contamination, all the pollutants in the city, no, outside the city. So the people get used to. And I think it's very important, all this information, to understand what we need to ask when we rent a house, because as end user, and also if we are working in a place, to make sure that we have a good air quality index, and if they are the developers, to start to integrate, no, this topic. It's not commodities, we need it. Well, Dr. Illa, to close this insightful interview, as a consumer, how can I improve indoor quality in my home, or how can I tell if there is an indoor air quality problem in my workplace?
Okay, let me conclude with final thoughts also to address your question. Let's face it, environmentally speaking, we're running amok. We're polluting so much, and then considering the concentration of particulate matter and gaseous pollutants suspended in the outdoor air, it's eventually that sink where you're going to use to introduce the air indoors. So we need to ensure that our systems, our HVAC system, is capable to encompass or accommodate filters that and their stages appropriately to fit that environment. And that's going to be different, you know. It's what works on a specific location in the same country may not really work in another country, whether you are near a refinery or near a power station. You know, in some countries, you know, the luxury of choosing the location may not be available like other countries. So again, I think important to learn from the pandemic. And one of the questions to ask is, are we granting air filters the sufficient space in fan coil unit and an air handling unit to avail and facilitate sufficient efficiency or sufficient filtration? I mean, how can a 1-inch or 2-inch filter be sufficient to facilitate any sort of filtration? You know, I mean, we're really compromising concept of even having filtration, because that's first not sustainable, and high efficiency cannot be achieved in such a limited space. So allocating sufficient space, efficiency, and having the system to be able to accommodate technically the performance of a filter that can provide sustainably high efficiency filters, that's important. Also ensuring that we have air quality sensors, the budgets are allocated, so we don't have to also always look at, oh, I don't have the budget this year, let's have it next year. We're not gonna wait. I'm not gonna wait until I go to a shopping mall or register my kids to a school where they're inhaling poor air quality and they have asthma attacks on a daily basis. To do that, we're gonna have to embrace and have standards of the best indoor air quality for these built environments and their building envelopes. That's going to require engineers and architects of the unseen, experts of the unknown, and consultants that are really unpredictable. They can have the best and think out of the box. I think it's time to look beyond what is available and look at what we may regard as impossible to maybe just be improbable, and put it together, integrate the technologies and make it probable. So we have what it takes, but We cannot draft filtration strategies on sand because soon they will certainly see the sea and disappear. So I invite the audience today to do three things. One is to rethink, re-envision, and reimagine how we perceive air quality and the associated technologies. One of them is, of course, air filtration, how we live, generate and use power, and how to have air filtration and air quality to be set by design, not by demand. So it's there from day one. It's not a retrofit. It's not an additional consideration. Or if you really ask, you have to pay. No, air quality is a pillar of our economy, and it's a major element, foundation of our well-being. And if you're going to put me in a smart city that's going to make me have asthma attacks, I'm not going to be there. Second part is every building is different, and every building may have a different requirement in terms of heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and filtration. Also on that point, there are an integrative homework that needs to be played. Maybe 40% filtration, 40% ventilation, or, you know, it cannot just be one or another. It's a combination of everything. This is why you need a holistic approach to be able to embrace this. The air filtration requirements, as we said, it's going to differ, and we need to ensure that we can afford this. So designers and manufacturers and industry leaders need to make sure that the targets are accessible and achievable. The technologies are affordable and available, so it's not just available for the rich. Otherwise, we're telling poor people in certain parts of certain continents, you're too poor to afford good air quality. So air, the best air quality is available for everyone and should be accessed by everyone. And then we need to understand that embracing sustainability is the only way forward. It's not a secret. Now, what are we going to do to embrace it? That's a question. How we can shift emphasis from what we're getting now. We seem to be so focused on what we're getting now rather than what we are becoming in the future. I wouldn't want to have the best indoor air quality. Meanwhile, somebody is suffering, you know, choking from air pollution because they are too weak or too incapable to do something about it. So that's going to require that we steer our mindsets and strategies to realignment. Where does the realignment start? How does it start? We need policies, and we need governments, private sectors, and manufacturing companies and industry leaders to play part. It's not only the government, it's not only the private sector, but it's a holistic approach by everybody. Keep in mind, it's not enough to speak the same sustainability language. We have to be on the same action page.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Iyad. I think that this, as you say, the holistic, that every stakeholder do their part, and we integrate all the knowledge together so we can have a better solution. That is the important thing about sustainability. It's not just for now, it's from the future. And then think about how we can regenerate our environment, because now we are in a, we are no longer to be sustainable. We need to think more about how we can regenerate the resources that we have wasted in the last years. So I want to say a huge thank you, Dr. Iyad, for contributing and helping us spread awareness around this interesting topic. And for the audience, remember to share and repost our content. And you find us as Conexión Circular. And let's do good and better every day. And good afternoon.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.